Good morning, everybody. I'm Karen Garrison, and I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Karen.
And it's truly through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982. And that does not make me a miracle. It makes Alcoholics Anonymous a miracle. And if you're new here today, I want to welcome you today. And I always call it, can you hear me now? Hello? Can you hear me now? Thank you. Can you hear me now? They still can't hear me. Can you hear me now? I'm Karen Garrison, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's truly through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982. And that does not make me a miracle, it makes Alcoholics Anonymous a miracle. And if you're new here today, I want to welcome you to AA. And I always call it God's Magnificent AA, the program that saved my life, and it's going to save yours too, if you're willing to take a few quick actions. And I suggest strongly that you get a sponsor, that you get that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get busy into everybody else is doing around here, and you're going to stay sober, as I've stayed sober for 23 years, and people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. My home group is the Pacific Group in West LA, a group I'm very, very proud to be a member of, just as I'm sure you're proud to be a member of yours. And I guess if you're not proud, you ought to get a job, and you might change your mind. I certainly have a job, and I'm proud to have that job. I want to thank Mark and the committee for inviting me. This is an honor and a privilege. It's one that I do not take lightly, I'll guarantee you. You guys, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. And I think that it shows, and I make an awful lot of mistakes. I do an awful lot of things wrong. But I'll tell you one thing, that I love you. Make no mistake about that. You know, I've been taught to do an awful lot of things before I ever opened my big mouth. And one thing is to talk to my sponsor, and Clancy's injuries, love and very best wishes. And if anybody in this room is wondering why I have a man for a sponsor and why I have Clancy for a sponsor, it's really quite simple. I did not get sober in California. I got sober in a place called Lincoln, Nebraska, and was not doing well in Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip, and I'm certainly not proud of this as I stand here this morning. And thank God for the old-timers in AA, because somebody loved me enough to get my current sponsor. And I got to tell you that my life has done nothing but totally complete trials as a result of that. And I absolutely adore the ground that man walks. And I talked to him Friday before I left town. And I said, what do you want me to talk about this weekend? And he said, oh, quit trying to be cute. Get up there and share your experience, your strength, and your hope. And tell those people what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Ignore the old timers. They got it. They don't need your inspiration, my dear. And talk directly to those new people, the life and blood of AA. And I believe that as I stand here and I welcome you and I hope that you stay. And then I think I did without a doubt the most important thing I can ever do. And that's to say, God, please help me say what you want me to say to these people. God is very much a part of my life today. You guys did not used to be that way for me, I can guarantee you. I come from an alcoholic hell. I could not even describe it. It was so bad. And you know, my life is real good today, and sometimes I forget how bad it was. And I can tell you the day I got sober, I weighed 95 pounds. I was the color of squash. Had an alcoholic hepatitis. I had a liver cirrhosis. I had ruptured esophageal varices. And if you don't know what that stuff is, you don't want to know, because you die from that kind of stuff. And I was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And if you guys haven't drank Mad Dog, I need to tell you it's not one of your finer wines, I can assure you. I'll guarantee you one thing, that crap has never seen a grape, make no mistake about that. And I literally could not believe what's going on in my life. I'd lost my children. I'd lost my husband twice. Although I really care about that, I want you to know. I lost my car. I'd lost my house. I destroyed every relationship I'd ever had with anybody. And I was clearly dying from alcoholism. And then I lost the one thing that brought my knees and disease. I lost my nursing license. And you guys, I love my profession. Absolutely devastated me, but did not stop me from drinking. And there's a reason for that, and it's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I have an obsession that somehow, someday, I'll learn to control and enjoy my drinking. The persistent illusion is astonishing, just like our book talks about many of us pursuing the gates of insanity and death. And I'll guarantee you one thing. I was in the gates of pure insanity. I got sober and almost into my coffin. And I am so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. As I stand here this morning, I cannot begin to tell you. And you're going to soon see why and stuff. But like I said earlier, my sobriety date is May 30th, 1982. It was not always my sobriety date. When I got my current sponsor, I had to change that date. And there's a reason for that. I'm one of these people who had to go and smoke dope when I got sober. And if you're smoking marijuana in this room today, you are not sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I would tell you right this minute. And I don't want to argue about it afterwards. Ask any old-timer if you don't believe me. And if I have to change my date, then by God, so do you. But anyway, I got my current sponsor, and I tried to explain to him that where I come from in Nebraska, you can have two sobriety days, one from alcohol and one from drugs. He quickly pointed out to me that I was in Southern California. We have one date to get my date changed. And I was just smart-ass when I got my current sponsor. And I said, where does the book mention pot? He said, well, the book does mention pot. And I said, Clancy, I have read that book. He said, I talk about marijuana in that book. And he said, if I find the word pot in that book, will you change your sobriety? Never argue with me again. And I knew I was making a bad deal, you guys, but I did it anyway. And I'll be damned if he didn't flip open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. On the first page of Bill Wilson's story, it says, died by musket or by pot. I said, that is not what that means. He said, quite frankly, my dear, I don't care what it means. You said the book didn't mention pot. It does mention pot. Change your sobriety date. And my life is flourished, I got to tell you guys. But I'm delighted to be here. I've had a great time this weekend. This committee has just done a great job, you guys. They really have a round of applause, and certainly in order to them. I'm also delighted that you don't have a glass. Plum, you can see your speaker. This one's bad enough, but anyway, I was on the East Coast giving a talk, and remember my talk, my skirt fell off in front of 3,000 people, and I had this black suit on, this wraparound skirt, and the button came, and I thought, my God, my skirt's going to fall on the floor, and it was too late. It was on the floor, but you guys, you know what? Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to wear underwear, and thank God I had some on, I'll tell you. Also taught me to take action. I just picked up that skirt and kept right on talking. What else are you going to do? But anyway. You guys, this has been without a doubt the best 2 years of my sobriety, and I want to share that with you here tonight. You know, if you'd have asked me New Year's Eve, are your men's made in Alcoholics Anonymous? I would have said yes, and that would have been the absolute truth for me. I'm $86,000 out of debt in this program. No verbal amends, no financial amends. I'm home free here. All I can do is continue to have a God in my life, have a sponsor, continue these steps, go to meetings, and the other 3,000 things we do to stay sober. It looks like I'm going to be fine and stuff. And, you know, our book says that more will be revealed, folks. And I flew to Kansas City, Missouri a year ago on New Year's Eve to give an AA talk. They have this big dinner, dance, banquet type thing. So the people in AA asked me to come. So I flew there, and air traffic control to hell is for a reason, so we were circling the city, and I looked out the airplane window, and I spied the Hyatt Regency Hotel. I thought, oh my God, there's the Hyatt Regency, and I remember something I'd done about 35 years ago. You know, I read my inventory to my sponsor. I'd not mentioned this for whatever reason. I'd done so much of this sort of thing, it was no big deal, I guess, but I really didn't even remember it and stuff. Now I remember it, and I got to tell my sponsor, so I called him up, and he said, well, you get over there and make amends for you. Probably gave the place a bad name and stuff, but anyway, 35 years ago, on Easter morning, I found myself in the Hyatt Regency Hotel, glass elevator, stark naked, and landed on the first floor of the hotel, and the door opened up, and here was this family standing there in their Easter clothes. I'll never forget the look on these people's faces as long as I live, but anyway, I thought, well, if I have time, I'll get over there and get that done and stuff. I did not have time. That committee kept me really, really busy. I was not going to be there for 24 hours and stuff. So I left the airport on New Year's Day to come back to Los Angeles, and my flight was canceled. I thought, great, I got 5 hours to kill, take a show, go to the Hyatt, and try to find somebody to talk to, although I doubt if I could even find anybody on New Year's Day to talk to. And boy, I was wrong about that, let me tell you. I said, I'm the manager of the Hyatt Regency Hotel, and I told him what I'd done. He laughed. He said, Karen, stop. I have to tell you a funny story. He said, 35 years ago, my father was manager of the Hyatt at that time. We were going to come over here and have Easter brunch, and you got to take the glass elevator upstairs to take the to get the brunch area, and the door opened up, and a naked woman got off the elevator. Oh, Christ. And he said, I was only 7 years old. I'd never seen a naked woman before. And I said, well, I'm sorry. I had to be your first one. You got to take whatever you can get here. And he said, and guess what? Mom and Dad are here this week. And I thought, oh, wonderful, you know. He said, yeah, they're celebrating their 65th wedding anniversary. Let's have them come down and meet you. And I thought, let's not, you know. But we don't say that. We just go along. And I said, whatever you want to do will be fine with me. So Mom and Dad came in. I thought, my God, they're probably 150 years old on walkers. They'll probably have a heart attack when they find out who I am. And one more time, I was wrong about that. I said, I'm the loveliest people I've ever met before in my life. And they laughed. They said, Karen, we've talked about you for years in the bars of the Hyatt Regency. I thought, yeah, I guess I bet you did too. And I said, I'm so sorry I embarrassed you and your family here all those years ago. What can I do to make that right? And they said, just don't ever do it again. I said, you know what? I can't think of any more disgusting than a 59-year-old woman getting out of a glass elevator stark naked. I very much have I taken that path anytime soon. But so as I stand here this morning, my amends are made in Alcoholics Anonymous, but it ain't midnight yet, folks. You never know what's going to happen around here. But anyway, a year ago in May, I was over in Laughlin, Nevada. I spoke at the Tri-State Roundup over there. And if you guys haven't experienced that, my God, that's a fabulous event. They get about 7,000 to 8,000 people this thing. And we were hanging around the casino on Thursday night waiting for the meeting to start, and I hit a $10,000 slot is what happened. And I was to experience every promise in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in about 5 seconds flat. I was to know a new freedom and a new happiness, and fear of financial insecurity left me temporarily. And if you're near here today, that is not how you get the promises in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I swear to God, I got them on. It was really a great experience. Don Laughlin owns that Riverside Hotel over there. So, you know, whenever you hit money like that, you're going to get management's attention real quick. They want their money back is what they want. But he came down, he said, can we extend your stay? And I said, no, check, please. I'm taking it back to LA. And he said, what are you doing here this weekend? And I said, well, actually, I'm speaking at the Roundup. And he said, oh, can I come hear your talk? I love to hear the AA speakers talk. And I thought, why would you want to do that? And he said, I just love to hear them talk. And I said, well, it's your hotel. You do whatever you want to, I guess. And by God, he was on the line the very next night. And this is so funny, you guys. They never give up. He said, are you sure we can't extend your stay? And I said, I'm positive. But I'm happy to report here this morning. I brought that $10,000 back to Los Angeles. I paid my car off with it. And I am truly debt-free in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it is a great position to be in, let me tell you. I never wish to pay $86,000 back again as long as I live, let me tell you. It took me 18 years to do that. It's like paying for dead horses everywhere. But I'll tell you one thing. I know a sense of freedom as I'm standing this morning. I can't even begin to describe to you. But anyway, it's been a great 2 years of my sobriety. You know, I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska. I come from a wonderful home there in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I want you to know that my mother wants you to know it too. I'll guarantee you that. You know, my mom died 13 years ago. And God, I miss her so much. I can't begin to tell you guys. And boy, you only have one, folks. And when they're gone, they're gone. And I'd made amends to her many, many years ago. We had a wonderful relationship last few years of her life and stuff. But I just miss her so much. And I have to tell you guys a funny story. I went back to Nebraska in August to visit my kids and my grandkids and stuff, and I told my eldest son, I said, I'm going to go out to Grandma's grave and put some flowers down. I said, where's your other grandmother buried? I wasn't there for my ex-mother-in-law's funeral, so I had no idea where she was buried. And he said, well, Mom, he said, just go up to the grave, and he said, there's Grandma Warner's grave and mark off 15 rows, and there's Grandma Lynn's grave. And I said, okay. So I promised the people in Nebraska I'd speak at their 5:30 Alana Club meeting, so it was about 10 after 5, and I really had to hurry and stuff, so it was like overcast in Nebraska. The day had been raining and stuff, and it's a tiny little graveyard. Nobody was there but me and stuff. But anyway, I put the flowers down on my mom's grave. I marked off 15 rows to my ex-mother-in-law's grave and put the flowers down, and I backed up, and I found myself in an 8-foot grave, you guys, and I couldn't get out of that damn thing. Let me tell you something, folks. When you're in it, you're in it. You ain't getting out, trust me. But anyway, the grave diggers in Nebraska, they opened the grave the day before, and they put a tarp up and a caution sign, and the casket, you know, the holder, it's basically impossible to fall in a grave. But the grave diggers thought, well, nobody's out here. Let's go to dinner, and we'll come back and do it later. And I come sauntering over. But anyway, I thought, how am I going to get out of this damn thing? Standing in my dress, it had mud all over it and stuff. And so what are you going to do? You start screaming, help is what you do. So about 10 minutes later, this old lady walked over to the grave, and she's old, but I'm not, right? And she says to me, she says, I don't think you're supposed to be in there. And I thought, stupid woman. You know, I didn't say that, though. And I said, you know, have you got a cell phone? Can you call somebody to get me out of here? And she said, I don't have a cell phone. And I thought, well, can you go up to the office and see if anybody's still there and tell them to call the fire department or something, bring a ladder, get me out of here. But tell them not to run the sirens. Nobody's hurt here and stuff. And here they come, you guys, 6 Lincoln, Nebraska fire trucks with their sirens going, 3 Lincoln, Nebraska police cars with their sirens going, and reporters of all damn things. I said, don't you dare put my name in the paper. And they said, we have to report the fire call, but we won't put your name in the paper. And I said, you better see that you don't. There it was Monday morning, Lincoln Journal and Star, California woman falls in an 8-foot grave, Karen Garrison. I couldn't believe they did that. But anyway, I miss my mom so much. And I come from an alcoholic home, and I don't think that's neither here nor there. I don't do well with people that stand at AA podiums and blame anybody for anything. And my father died from his disease on the streets of Chicago in 1979. And you tell me how a major in the Air Force dies on Skid Row. I don't know how that happened, other than the fact that he was an alcoholic. And whether he found AA or not, I do not know. I just know that he certainly did not stay sober as a result of it. So one more time this morning, this is a cunning, baffling, powerful disease that kills people. This is not a game I'm playing up here. This is serious business. And I would give any in the world if my father were alive today, because we would have a lot to talk about, I can tell you. I have a sister who was Miss Rah-Rah in high school and homecoming queen and cheerleader and all that kind of crap and made straight A's, never cracked a book, and I made straight F's, never cracked a book, and that was the difference. My sister was a beautiful little girl. She's a gorgeous woman today. She looks nothing like I do, I got to tell you. And she was a model for Neiman Marcus in Dallas for many, many years, and now she's retired and teaches school for the West Indies, in the West Indies. And, you know, and I love that woman so much today, I cannot begin to tell you guys. And I found out something about her. She's also very beautiful on the inside, too, and I never used to know that. I have a brother who was a fighter pilot in the Navy for many, many years. My brother retired 4 years ago in August, and during 9/11 in Iraq and so forth, he's been called back in the service. And, you know, my brother is really old to be a fighter pilot. You guys, he's 52 years old, and we were growing up, I thought he was such a dork, I can't begin to tell you. Straight as an arrow, Mike, doesn't drink, doesn't use drugs, doesn't screw around. He was an embarrassment to me, if you want to know the truth. And today, I'm so proud of that man, I cannot begin to tell you. You wouldn't catch me over Iraq in any fighter plane, but neither one of these people are alcoholic. And I have another sister who's married the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who got me out of a whole bunch of trouble when I got sober, and I'm welcome in their homes today, and I never used to be. I come from basically a very boring family, if you know the truth. They're high successful people and they bore me to tears, I gotta tell you. But yeah, I love them, but they bore me to tears. And I have a couple kids who are 44 and 45 years old, and I know I certainly don't look old enough to have kids that age, but by God, I sure do. And this is where it really starts getting interesting for me. These kids are anything but boring, I gotta tell you guys. As a matter of fact, they're a couple of jerks, if you want to know the truth. But you know what? Those couple of jerks give me five of the most gorgeous grandbabies you've ever seen before in your life. And you know, I hate to be a bragging grandmother as I stand here today. I detest people that do this, but when I do, it's a whole different ballgame, let me tell you. I have a beautiful grandson. His name is Ryan, and Ryan is 14, soon to be 15 years old. And apparently, Ryan is quite a gymnast, you guys. I knew he was good. I know he was that good. And my son and his wife got a phone call from Budweiser out of St. Louis, Missouri, wanting to sponsor this kid and train him for the Olympics, you guys. And my son called me, and this is the kind of alcoholic I am. I jump from phone call to Olympic Stadium, gold medal around his neck, and what will I wear, you know? It happened just that quick, but I found myself telling my child, Jeff, you have to do what you think is right. This is your son, not mine. And I wanted to shriek at him and say, let him go, you idiot. It's the opportunity of a lifetime. But I kept my mouth shut. Once in a while, Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to keep my mouth shut, and it really turned out well this time. And he said, Mom, he is so little to be going away. And I said, he's your child, not mine. He said, Mom, what would you do? Now I'm on, folks, let me tell you. And Jeff, I said, I don't think anybody knows what they would do for sure unless it happens to them. But I said, we have a dear friend, Lincoln, who's a child psychologist. And I said, why don't you have Chris come over and talk to Ryan and see what he thinks? And my son did exactly that. And you know that child psychologist told my son, his wife, let him go. It's the opportunity of a lifetime. He's a very stable young man. So I'm happy to report here this morning that my little grandbaby is down in Norman, Oklahoma, training at Nadia Comaneci and Bart Connors Clinic down there. And you guys, I have no idea what's going to happen with that. I have no idea. But I'll guarantee you one thing. If that baby goes to the next Summer Olympics, his grandma will be in that stadium. If I have to walk there, I'll be there. But, you know, in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says that great events will come to pass for us and countless others. And I want to share a very great event in my life with you. It won't be in your lives, it was most certainly in mine. You guys, when I got sober, my family wanted absolutely nothing to do with me. That all the crap they were going to take off me years ago had to walk away for their own sanity, the truth. So anything I get from my family is icing on the cake, let me tell you guys. And, you know, through making amends around here and sponsorship and the things we do, it's all turned around for me now. But it took a long time for it to happen. In my case, that's a good thing. But on my 20th AA birthday, I got a phone call about 10:30 at night from Ryan. And it was his very first day down in Norman, Oklahoma. And he said, oh, grandmother, I'm so sorry to call you so late. And I said, it is never too late to call your grandmother. Don't you ever think that. And he said, oh, Grandma, I wanted to wish you a happy 20th AA birthday. And you guys, I just stood there and cried like a baby. And he said, oh, Grandma, I didn't make you cry. And I said, you didn't make me cry. I'm crying because I'm so happy you called me. And he said, oh, Grandma, we're so proud of you. And I thought, oh, stop, you know, but anyway, I would not trade that phone call for that $10,000. Well, that's not quite true, but you know what I'm talking about. Same thing happened on my AA birthday number 21, AA birthday number 22, and AA birthday number 23. And I will tell you, I wouldn't trade those phone calls for just about anything, let me tell you guys. So as I stand here this morning, things are very good in my family. It is only a direct result of this program, I can assure you, and it took a long time for it to happen. But anyway, I grew up in Nebraska. I come from a wonderful home there, like I said, and I was a disruptive jerk when I was growing up, always in trouble, kicked out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious. I really hated people telling me what to do. And I liked it even less today, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And I hear that a lot from AA podiums, and I'm right on with that, let me tell you. And, you know, I really don't remember my first drink, you guys, but I can tell you that I hope to God I never forget my last one. And I hope it was my last one. Remember what alcohol did for me from the very beginning? It made me feel like I belonged. I could be anything I wanted to be. I could do anything I wanted to do. I drank at any given opportunity after that, and I was probably about 13 years old. You know, I realized that I'm going to meet about Alcoholics Anonymous this morning, and I honor this podium by talking about alcoholism up here. I used a lot of drugs too, make that a small part of my story. My sponsor encourages me to do that. And, you know, I was growing up in Nebraska. There just was not a lot of drugs on the street, but I'll guarantee you I found every single one of those drugs. And, you know, there's some marijuana and speed and stuff. And today, if you caught for possession of marijuana, you get a ticket, big deal. When I was growing up, you went to prison is what happened to you. And that didn't scare me, absolutely nothing scared me. I didn't think I wasn't supposed to be doing. I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way that it was for me, and we're supposed to tell the truth up here, that if you pat me on the head, my pants fall is what happens to me. And I got myself into a lot of trouble when I was growing up. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You name it about, and I love it about them. They've been the downfall of my entire existence, and they remain the same today, I'm sorry to say. And I particularly like sick men, and there's a room full of them here this morning. I can just feel it, you know. That's one thing I love about Southern California, girls. It's got so many sick men, and I'm just entertained around the clock 24 hours a day. And you know, you guys, I'm 61 years old, and I have a boyfriend. You better well believe I have a boyfriend. He lives in New York, and I live in L.A. That's where we get along so well and stuff. So things haven't changed a whole lot for me in that arena, let me tell you. But anyway, you know, I got to tell you guys a funny story. I was in Nashville, Tennessee about 14 years ago giving a talk, and one of the fine ladies of Nashville, Tennessee, A, walked up to me afterwards, I want you to know, and this woman said to me, she said, "You're disgusting," and she wasn't kidding you guys. She meant every word of it, and I said, "Lady, from where I come from, being disgusting is a step up, I can assure you." And furthermore, if I wanted you to sponsor me, I'd flown to Nashville and asked you. You know, I hear some women get this podium, and I wonder if they were drinking, you guys, I really do. Do all their drinking, and women say, shoot through the keyhole with an eyedropper. I was out there big time. I got myself into a lot of trouble. I've been taught to share that freely in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I offend anybody in this room today, I would never offend anybody in the program that saved my life. And besides that, my book tells me, and this is my favorite part of our book, it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands, your dark past will be the greatest possession that you have. And it goes on to say, because you can literally avert death and misery for others. And I found this to be very, very true in my sobriety. So if anybody here this morning, I want to hear about it afterwards. But anyway, I got pregnant when I was 16 years old, and I had to get married. And as it must be, I married an alcoholic. He was 17. I was 16. I couldn't cook. I couldn't clean. I couldn't take care of a baby, nor did I want to take care of a baby. And before we knew, we had two babies to take care of. And I quickly found out what caused all that, and I put a halt to it, I'll guarantee you that. And that caused me a lot of trouble throughout the years. And as it must be, I married an individual that refused to work, that drank on a daily basis. He used to come home and beat me up on a daily basis. And I had never seen a man hit a woman before in my life, you guys. I'll guarantee you one thing. If my dad would lay one hand on my mom, she'd have knocked him from here to the moon, I got to tell you. And I grew to hate this guy very, very much. And I'm not blaming him for my alcoholism. You know, it's just part of my story, and I need to share it. And some in that family had to get a job. And I didn't finish junior high yet, for Christ's sakes. And I found a job as a nurse's aide at a hospital there in Lincoln. And the magic was put in my life. I literally fell in love with nursing. And I made a plan to myself. I would love to go to school, and I'd love to become a registered nurse. That's what I'd love to do. You know, they say that alcoholics don't have willpower. And I'm here to tell you from this podium this morning that that is a bunch of crap. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. I don't have 1 ounce of willpower when it comes to my disease. But when I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And I went back. I finished junior high. I finished high school. I went to college full-time for 3 years, and I worked full-time for 3 years. And I'm talking about 18, 20 hours a day, you guys, and that is hard stuff to do. I did not drink, not use any drugs during this period of time. At the age of 27 years old, I became a registered nurse. And if you think I'm proud to stand here tonight, this morning and tell you that I got jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing Nebraska, and they told me, you are a disgrace to your profession, you're a disgrace to nursing, you're a disgrace to medicine, you are no longer working because we just jerked your nursing license. If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. You guys, I love my profession, and I really, really mean that. And I would never do anything to jeopardize the people that I work with or the people that I take care of on ordinary circumstances. And what I had to tell you this morning is a story about how I threw it right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism. At the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man. And girls, I got to tell you that a whole new world opened up to me. It's called men and alcohol. And I went absolutely hog wild is what I did. I was engaged 8 times during that divorce. I never did marry these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism. I know nothing about social drinking. I drank, and with alcoholics, and we do indeed die from this. And at the age of 27 years old, I went to work in surgery at a hospital there in Nebraska, and I had that job for 19 years. I love working in the operating room. I love taking care of those patients. It's a colorful, exciting nursing position. I drank, and with medical people mostly. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard, and they played hard. And you know, the instance of alcoholism is tremendously high in my profession, let me tell you. And that'll do a lot for your security if you're going to have surgery next week. That has to be very, very true. And those people are so grateful that I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics is what I'm talking about. You know, in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says clearly that we're to tell in the general way what our drinking was like. And you're going to get the general idea real quick about what my drinking was like. I can tell you guys about my drinking in about 5 seconds, if you know the truth. Many, many years ago, I was at a little concert in upstate New York called Woodstock. And I'm not talking about that piece of crap they had 10 years ago. I'm talking about the real Woodstock. And there will never be another one, trust me on that. The kids from the 60s threw a party that nobody will ever match, I'm quite sure. And New York got when they're going to have this big event. And they told these people, if you don't get medical coverage, you are not going to have this concert. Started hiring people from Nebraska. Thought be more responsible. And we were a seedy lot, I can assure you. And I was the first drunk to sign up this deal. And my 9 girls I worked with to join me. And maybe about 80 doctors from New York City, and they were at Woodstock. I never seen so much alcohol in one place in my entire life. You could have floated a bathroom, no problem whatsoever. And the drugs, it was like a candy store. And everybody was sharing. We were sharing our narcotics from everybody else. But we had this great big semi-truck on that back lot of Woodstock. That was our hospital park back there, and I recall being that semi the entire week. But I do recall what it was like to stand in front of the stage at night that Richie Havens sang Freedom, and Joe Cocker and Country Joe stand in those groups that I love. I come from the roaring 60s, you guys, and I love rock and roll, let me tell you. And things have not changed in my life one little tiny bit. I loved Elvis Presley, and Janis Joplin was my lady, let me tell you. Wouldn't Janis Joplin have been a fine member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys? I'd have hung out with Janis, let me tell you. I'd trade Janis for Clancy any day of the week if you want to know the truth. I'm just kidding. Do not tell him I said that, please. I was just kidding. I wouldn't trade my sponsor for 20 Janis Joplins, but drinking for me at one time was a fun thing, you guys. It'd be a lie if you stand this morning and say anything but that. But I can't remember the fun, I can remember the pain that it caused me. And one more time, I am so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, I cannot begin to tell you. And you know, the drunk driving charges, the bad checks, all the stuff that we eventually do. My kids were in trouble. I never could marry these guys I was engaged to. They kept dying from alcoholism. And I thought, you know, I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. The kids need their father. Besides that, I need to get even with him for all the things that he's done to me. And those are not very good reasons to get married again, I got to tell you. And I'm certainly not proud as I stand here this morning. You know, if anybody in this room is thinking about getting married to the same person twice, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe it is like taking a bite out of the same turd twice, if you will. I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel. And and he feels the same way I do, too, as a matter of fact. But I danced that man through 3 of the most miserable years of his life. And I love to tell you guys this story, I'm ready to tell you. Excuse me. my sponsor always tells me, that is not funny, and you should not be telling that from AA podiums. I said, okay, fine, then I won't tell anymore. And he said, no, go ahead and tell those people see how sick you really were, and apparently how sick you really still are. And I still think it's funny, and I'm telling the story. But anyway, I married him again. I told him, I said, if you ever hit me again, buddy, I will kill you next time you hit me. And he said, I'll never hit you again ever. And I said, you better see that you don't. And he lied is what he did. And he came home drunk one night. And I happened to be sober this night for some reason. And I don't know why, because I usually never was. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home drunk. They want to take you to bed and stuff. And I was not buying it. If there's anything I can't stand, it's some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober. I will say that when the shoe's under their foot, though, it's fine with me. And that guy came up and indicated that to me. And I said, you get your hands off me and leave me alone. I wanted nothing to do with him, period. And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm here to tell you guys that I was pissed. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about it, if you know the truth. And I told him, I said, you go to sleep on that couch and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born. And he sat up for hours, you guys, his eyes pried open. And as it must be, he finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis. And this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell it what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was feeling no pain, I can assure you. And I was sitting there watching this guy and thinking to myself, what can I do to get even this guy for all the things that he's done to me? And, you know, I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you the story, and I can tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. I thought, you disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach. And the more I drank, the madder I got. And you guys, you know, I'm a nurse, and I'm very familiar with male anatomy, and I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse. But anyway, I thought to myself, what can I do to get even with this guy for all the things he's done to me? And I came up with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. That's one thing we should never do, folks, is drink and think at the same time. And this was many, many years ago, you guys, when super glue first came out. And super glue was powerful stuff. You know, Mrs. Bobbitt has nothing on me, I can assure you. I was a form before she ever got started, and I got that super glue out, and I read the directions on that super glue, and like I said, I was drunk, and I wasn't seeing very clearly, and what I thought those directions said were, if this hits human skin, you better get it off in 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said was, in fact, if this hits human skin, you better get it off in 5 minutes, is what it said. And I'm with this guy, I get so excited when I tell this story, I could just do it all over again. This guy and I poured super glue all over this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. There was not one place, man, to have super glue. And I laughed about it, and I went to bed. And I woke up in the morning to screams of horror like you cannot even believe. And, you know, I did not mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, and I swear to God that's true. But I'll tell you what happened to my ex-husband. This guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born, and now he clearly was, I can assure you. We had a telephone by our bed there, in our bedroom there in Lincoln. He called the police, and the cops were out in front of our home with their sirens going. There was an ambulance out there. The neighbors were gawking out of their windows. And, you know, one thing you guys got to keep in mind here, they did not see things like this happen in Lincoln, Nebraska. In California, would not surprise me one bit, but certainly not there. And the cops were laughing, which led me the whole thing was funny. And they said, lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this? And I stood there and I said, what makes you think that I did it anyway? I was only standing with glue on my hands, for Christ's sakes. And they said, you're under arrest for assault and battery. And I said, you cannot arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against their husbands. I knew better than that. And 2 days later, when I got out of jail, I guess I didn't know better than that. And they took that man to the very hospital I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. And one more time, the whole staff saw what Karen did. And they took me to jail, I might add, and it turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off, and they had to get two surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And, you know, there's a paper about that at Creighton, and anybody that's thinking about going to medical school, you can read it about it if you want to. I'd always wanted a paper about me, but not like this, I gotta tell you. And I was sitting in that jail thinking to myself, I am getting out of this marriage. When this guy comes home from the hospital, he's gonna glue something to mine shut. And he would have too, I gotta tell you. I'm sorry, but he would have. For those of you who don't know this, that happened to a lady in Kentucky about 3 years ago. I was on the national news, and I was on the freeway in LA. I had a wreck when I heard. I thought, my God, better her than me, I got to tell you. But anyway, we have an amends step in this program, and my sponsor made me get on an airplane and fly to Sacramento, California, and make amends to my ex-husband where he currently lives. And I tried to tell my sponsor, I'm not sorry that I did that. Therefore, I don't have to make the amends. He said, I don't care whether you're sorry or not. Get on that airplane, get there, and do what I'm asking you to do, and maybe one of these days you will be sorry. And I'm telling you, but in this room, that when that guy sees me, he kind of backs up, let me tell you. But we're able to sit down and talk and stuff, and I made my amends to him. And I will tell you guys, I walked away from that man. I was free what I had done to him. I was free of being married to him twice. And I will tell you, for the first time in my sobriety, the promise in the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous came through in my life. And you know what else I found about that? Motives mean nothing here, folks. My motives sucked on that one, let me tell you. But I still got the promises, so go figure. It's action A that counts, not motives around here and stuff. But anyway, I divorced him one more time, and oh, I almost forgot to tell you guys a funny story. I went up to Lompoc Prison about a year and a half ago to give an AA talk, and as we all know, it's a men's federal penitentiary in Central Coast, California, and they're this monthly speakers meeting. So I went up there, I drove up there, and they asked people to come up and share and so forth. So you have to go to the guard tower, and you push the button, they say, who are you and what is your business? And I told them, they said, well, Mrs. Garrison, do you have any weapons on you, any guns, knives, explosives? And I said, no. And they said, well, Mrs. Garrison, do you have any super glue on you? For the first time in my life, I was totally speechless, you know. It was so fun. You guys, it was so fun. They were in the guard tower laughing. The prisoners put them up to it and stuff. And I said, no, as a matter of fact, I don't. They said, well, then you can come on in and stuff. And then the prisoners sent me to their meeting room. They had this blackboard and this great big circle with a red slash. They said, no super glue in here today. But anyway, you never know what's going to happen now, like Alcoholics folks. But anyway, I divorced this guy, and I got involved with the most bizarre man I've ever met before in my life. This guy told me he was in the mafia. Now, I don't think anybody in Nebraska is in the mafia, for Christ's sakes. And I was lying to him, and he was lying to me. It was your typical alcoholic nightmare is what it was. I was drinking on a daily basis. I was taking Valium for severe tremors I was starting to have. It was beginning to be no more fun, I got to tell you guys. You know, I'm a nurse and I've studied alcoholism. I knew all about it before I became one. It shows me one more time here this morning what our book says is so true. Self-knowledge avails us nothing with this disease. It's action that counts. Nowhere in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous we have a chapter called Into Thinking. We have one that's called Into Action. And that's the only reason I'm standing here 23 years sober. And the day came for me that hospital told me, we have had all the crap we're going to take off of you, Karen. We cannot read about our nursing staff in the paper anymore, glue in husbands, drunk driving charges, bad checks, all the stuff that you're doing. Everything you do in Nebraska is in the paper, I'm sorry to say. And they knew my game, let me tell you. And they said, you have a drinking problem, you're going to treatment, or you're out of here. They said, Karen, you know, this is pathetic. You're the finest nurse on this staff. You have won awards for your nursing ability. What in the world is wrong with you? Get some help, for Christ's sakes. We're not protecting you no more. You're out of here, treatment, or you're out of here. And I said, you and what army's going to make me go to a treatment center? And I walked out of a job that I loved more than anything in the whole world, and I cannot say that enough today. And I drank and I drank and I died 1,000 times over. I went to work at a nursing home there in Lincoln. And what I'm ready to share with you guys is something I am not proud to discuss from any AA podium. It took me years of my sobriety before I would ever mention this. I found myself still in drugs in that nursing home. And it wasn't because I like drugs. It has nothing to do with anything. I drink any day over any drug I can name. I took drugs to alleviate withdrawal symptoms of what I was doing. You know, in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, Bill Wilson talks in his story. He says, under the powerful influence of alcohol and sedation, he wound up on the rocks. That is precisely what happened to me, folks. But anyway, you know, I found myself, I couldn't go more than 3 hours without drinking or using something and stuff. And, you know, I could not drink at work, so I started stealing narcotics. That's just exactly what happened. I was taking morphine and Demerol and cocaine and Valium and get my damn hands on. And if you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. And the day came to me, the people that ran that place came up to me and they said, Karen, what is wrong with you? You are just weird is what you are. Now, you take good care of the patients, you're a great nurse, but you're just strange. And I remember thinking to myself, you'd be strange too if you had 200 milligrams of Demerol on board. You'd be strange too. And I threw my narcotic keys at him and I walked out the door before they fired me. And I went to work at Bryan Memorial Hospital there in Lincoln. And you guys, it's a fine, fine facility. And I was drunk on that interview, got that nursing position. And I'm not talking about falling down drunk. I was just maintaining a certain level of alcohol in my bloodstream that I would not shake and have those violent tremors. That is clearly desperation drinking. Our book describes it vividly. And I was in hot water up to my yin-yang, let me tell you. The very thought that I might drink again makes the hair on my neck stand straight up. And that's why I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous and stuff. But the day came for me when I got caught red-handed stealing some morphine from that hospital, and this has got to be without a doubt the most humiliating day of my entire life. When they said to me, you give us your narcotic keys and you get out of this hospital, don't you ever walk back in here again. We're reporting this to the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska. That's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they should have done. My other job should have done too, as a matter of fact. And long story short here this morning, I lost my nursing license. And to make a long story short and short from here today, I wound up on the streets of Nebraska is what happened to me. And you guys, I spent 2 years on the street.
streets, and I've traveled the Midwest, I prostituted myself, and I'll guarantee you one thing, that I have seen and done things that no woman should ever see or doing. I'm still so sick in the head sometimes I think to myself, I wouldn't mind seeing some of them again, you know, and my sponsor assures me I am still a very ill person to be thinking that kind of crap. And, you know, I've been in nut houses, I've been in detoxes, I've been in jails, I've been in institutions. I cannot think of a thing that happened on the streets as a practicing female alcoholic. Things happened to me I would not repeat from this podium this morning, but I'm sure that you had the general idea. And 2 years went by for me, and there I was back there in Lincoln, standing on Skid Row, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And I certainly had better things intended for myself than to be doing that, I gotta tell you. I will never forget that last day of my drinking as long as I live. And I hope to God it was the last day of my drinking, although I really can't tell you that much about it, if you know the truth. I apparently was so physically sick, I just passed down the streets is what happened. But, you know, before that happened, I remember thinking to myself, there was a Hilton Hotel adjacent to that Skid Row area, and I remember thinking to myself, 2 years ago, I used to stand on top of the Hilton Hotel and drink martinis with surgeons. What am I doing standing on Skid Row drinking with these people? And I rather imagine those people felt the same way when they arrived there. And like I said, I can't tell you much about it all. I woke up in an intensive care ward, the very hospital I was born at, the very hospital I worked at for 19 years, and I will tell you guys clearly that the alcoholic hell for me started the day I got sober. You know, I'm not a very big person. I only weighed 95 pounds when I got sober, and I was coming off a quarter whatever a day and 200 milligrams of Valium a day. That is a lot of booze, that's a lot of pills, and I had a lot of dying to do, let me tell you. You know, they say that most alcohol withdrawal is over within 3 days, and perhaps it is for some people. It certainly was not for me. It was going to be a long, long time for us to start feeling better. And I laid in that intensive care ward. I had tubes come out of my belly that were draining fluid off my liver. I had IVs going, and I found myself in withdrawal that was so bad I cannot begin to tell you guys. And I laid in that intensive care ward, and I shook, and I shook, and I died, and I died for the 30 solid days. And I'd scream at those nurses and demand they give me drugs for this withdrawal, and they wouldn't give me nothing. They said, there's nothing wrong with your heart. You're not getting one drug from us, so quit asking us for them. You need to fill one of those tremors, and maybe you'll never do it again. And I did not want to hear that, let me tell you. But let me tell you what these people did for me, and I'll be forever grateful as long as I'm sober in this program. They got 10 members of Alcoholics Anonymous to come and sit with me. And these people never left me day or night for 30 solid days. It was your original 12-step call, let me tell you. And I literally fell in love with these people, and I'll tell you why. There was nobody in my life the day I got sober. And for the first time in a long time, people were talking to me again. And, you know, I just want to say something really quickly because I feel so strongly about this because it saved my life. Once in a while in Alcoholics Anonymous, I hear people say, not very many people, and I don't hear it very often, when I hear it, I want to throttle them by the neck. They see things like, we don't go unless the alcoholic calls us. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm standing here 23 years sober this morning. I never made any damn phone call. Where'd that crap come from? If it's good enough for our co-founders, by God, it's good enough for us. I think Bill called Bob, as the story goes. I don't think Bob called Bill. I'll never forget where I'm coming from around here. And, you know, my responsibility statement doesn't seem to say, when anyone anywhere reaches out for help, we want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that I am responsible. The nurses reached out, the alcoholics responded, and I have to believe as a direct result of that I'm standing here 23 years sober this morning. But anyway, you know, I just feel strongly about it, you know. But anyway, you know, you guys, I just got back from Dorset, Vermont. I just visited Bill Wilson's grave and was able to go to Bill Wilson's grave and Dr. Bob's grave this like in June. We went to the Founders Day and so forth and was able to tell them, thank you for Alcoholics Anonymous, thank you. And what a great experience that was, and millions of medallions all over both their graves and stuff. I will never forget it as long as I live. I urge you, if you have the opportunity, if you're ever in Vermont, to get to Bill Wilson's grave and Bill and Lois Wilson's graves. They're just absolutely fabulous. But anyway, you know, I those people never left me day or night for 30 solid days. They'd say things like, Karen, just keep breathing. That's all you got to do is breathe. And I'd say, when is this withdrawal going to stop? And they said, when it's time, that's when it's going to stop. And that wasn't good enough for me. I wanted a date is what I wanted. And they were absolutely accurate about that. When it's time, it's time. And at 30 days of sobriety, I walked into that official treatment program of that hospital. I'm a product of a treatment center. I have no opinion on one way or the other. But apparently, I went to a fine one because all they talked about was Alcoholics Anonymous. And boy, there's a lot of bad ones out there, you guys. Let me tell you, and thank God I went to give one. And let me tell you what I was like when I was 30 days sober. I turned on you like you cannot even believe when you started telling me what to do. I need you so desperately on day one, but 30 days there was a whole different ballgame, let me tell you. And you know, where I went through treatment, a lot of people got kicked out of treatment for fraternizing. I didn't. Nobody wants to fraternize an orange person, I can assure you. And
They used to bring the patients over to the hospital, and they'd say, look at her, see what's going to happen to you if you keep on drinking, look at her. I thought, how dare you bring people in my room and say stuff like that. But you guys, you know what, in retrospect here this morning, I am really glad they did that. I get to think about that before I pick up any drink. But I was not a quick study in that inpatient 30-day program due to my rotten behaviors in there for 7 long months. That's a long time to be an inpatient 30-day program. But I completed that inpatient program, and I went to an outpatient program, and I went to an evening care program, I went to an aftercare program, and I found myself a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I was not doing one thing the way that you teach people in AA to do it. And I rapidly went through 19 sponsors in that town. I would tell the new people, you don't need to read the book, and you don't need a sponsor. We do what we want to do around here. This is an individual program. And needless to say, I was not real popular with the old-timers in Lincoln, Nebraska. You guys, the old-timers in AA are so precious to me as I stand here this morning. But not in 1982. I could have cared less what these people thought. And you can pull your crap around here just for so long, and these old-timers are going to start nailing you one right after the other. God love the mean old-timers in Alcoholics Anonymous. They at least saved my life, and boy, they are dying off right and left, I got to tell you guys, and they have taught me well, and I'll be eternally grateful. But this old guy with 29 years of sobriety grabbed me at an AA meeting one day. He said, come outside, I want to talk to you. He said, you stay away from new people. How dare you tell the new people in AA, read the book and they need a sponsor. He said, you're like a typhoid Mary in AA. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. He said, you've been through 19 sponsors in this town. We've had all the crap we're going to take off of you. He said, there's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska next weekend. His name is Clancy. You hear this man speak and ask this man if he will sponsor you. He is a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I know about Clancy, and I wanted nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you guys that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over. But I told this old timer, I said, who the hell do you think you are that you're going to tell me to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, if you don't get in that car and go with us, I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska. And I paid that money back, too, by the way. I did pay it back. And I will tell you guys that from a podium in Kearney, Nebraska, that Clancy literally, and I mean literally, put the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. My life has never been the same since that talk. And there's a reason for that. For the first time in my sobriety, I was identifying another alcoholic. And as I understand Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what this thing is all about. I know of no finer speaker in the world than my sponsor. I'm not saying that you need to believe that. It's only important that I believe that. And by the end of that talk, I wanted that man for my sponsor. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how God works in my life. I wouldn't have asked that man to sponsor me in a million years. Trust me, I've asked him. And I found myself walking across that convention floor and asking Clancy to be my sponsor. And he looked at me and he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And that's a lie anyway. He sponsors people crazy than I ever thought of being. And I thought to myself, what did he say that to me for? I went, you know, he didn't even know me. And I was sitting in my little white dress on, my little white gloves on, acting like a little goody two-shoe person. But anyway, I wasn't aware of the fact this old-timer had called him 2 weeks prior to him coming to Nebraska and asked if they brought me if he would talk to me. He said, of course I will. And he knew my game, let me tell you. And anyway, he said, Karen, I like to sponsor people on a long-distance basis, but I'm going to do this for you because I don't do it for you and probably go die somewhere. But he said, I'm going to tell you something, little girl, and you better listen to me real good, because I'm going to say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me every day. I tell you not to call me every day. You are going to read that book. You know, sponsor people. You'll become an active volume member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're not going to argue with me, defend your actions to me. You're going to do what I ask you to do. And if you don't want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And you guys, you want to talk about we stood at the turning point. This is the day in my recovery really beginning in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said 2 words that I almost fell over when I said them. I said, yes, sir. I don't tell people, yes, sir. Trust me, I do not. And one more time, God, if I can't do it for myself, respect's got to start for me somewhere, and for me somewhere, and for an Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went back to Lincoln. I became very, very active in AA in the right way. I ended up sponsoring a lot of women in that town. I am not bragging about that. It is not that much fun to sponsor 56 crazy women in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'll tell you what, I grew to love those women very, very much, and I'll tell you why. They literally showed me the first 4 years of my sobriety what to do and what not to do in this program. And every one of those women are still sober today, with the exception of one, and she died in a car accident when she was 13 years sober. But she died sober, you guys, and it wasn't because of me. They were active members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the first directions my sponsor gave me, I want you to get that nursing license back. I tried to tell this man, I cannot get the kind of humiliation. He said, Karen, are you arguing with me? And I said, no. He said, get up the State Board of Nursing, Nebraska, and tell those people you've been sober in AA for a year and a half, you'd like the opportunity to get your nursing license back. And you guys, I knew it wasn't going to work, but I did it anyway. And that's without a doubt the most important important thing I can say in this room this morning. I did what my sponsor asked me to do, whether I thought it would work or not. And I asked them for my license back. And they looked at me like I had just grown horns on the top of my head, I can assure you. And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I had to do a lot, you guys. I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawn, if you know the truth. And I had to keep my mouth shut in the process, too. And one of the happiest days of my life occurred 19 years ago last April, when one more time I was jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing Nebraska, and what they told me brought me to my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, welcome home. You're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. And as a gift from AA, oh, no, you can't. Thank you so much for clapping stuff. But let me tell you, that is your victory. That is totally your victory, not mine. You walked through every second of that with me in Alcoholics Anonymous, let me tell you. But anyway, I went out to California to visit a couple of times. I fell in love with Southern California and our respective parts of the country. We all think that we're in the mecca of Alcoholics Anonymous in the whole world. I am certainly no exception, so forth. But I told Clancy on the phone one day, I want to move to L.A., live on that crazy Venice Beach with all those crazy people. I knew I'd fit like a glove, and I've been wrong about that either. But I'm the Pacific group. I want to work at UCLA in the operating room. Then two of their transplant teams, their heart and liver transplant teams. I want this and I want that. And every single of those things have come true for me. And those are all gifts from AA. I deserve none of it. By God, I'm taking all of it. And, you know, before I sit down, I have a couple things I want to tell you guys because so many people today have asked me to tell these stories and stuff. You know, early on, my sponsor asked me. He said, Karen, where are you at? You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual program. Where are you at with that? What are you doing? Are you praying? Are you doing anything at all? I said, I don't believe in God, and I'm not praying. He said, you want me for a sponsor? I said, yeah. And he said, you will be praying, young lady. And he flipped open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he read to me that I get a daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual maintenance of the power greater than myself. And he went on to tell me, there's going to come a day in your sobriety when I can't help you, AA can't help you, and you had better well have a God in your life, my dear, or you are dead from the disease of alcoholism. He said, you have no mental defense against that first drink, and no human power can help that. You've got to have a God in your life. And I said, okay, what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to get on your knees in the morning. I want you to get on your knees at night. And I want you to pray for God's will. Do not pray for things. Pray for God's will and the power to carry that out. And I started doing that still when I lived in Nebraska, you guys. And I had Clancy long distance for 4 years, actually. But anyway, every day I talked to him on the telephone. I'd say, this is not working for me. I don't feel any connection with God. He said, are you staying sober one day at a time in Alcoholics Anonymous? I said, well, you know that I am. He said, that's the point of the whole thing. Are you stupid or what? I wasn't playing with a full deck when I arrived here. It took me a long, long time to get these little simple things. And in 1985, I find myself in Montreal, Canada, at the World Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you guys haven't experienced a World Conference, it's something that none of us should ever miss and stuff. And I drove from Nebraska with five people I sponsored. We drove straight through from Lincoln, Nebraska to Montreal. We only had $100 apiece. We hardly had any money. Those hotels were like $200 a night. We had no place to stay. But by God, we were going to Montreal, Canada. If I had walk there I was going, and I would never again ever do this, trust me. But anyway, the first time I'll do anything. But anyway, we got to Montreal and got the convention center, and of all the good luck, we found an apartment to rent for the whole week for $100. I could not believe our good luck. And I found myself in a great big football stadium at that Friday night meeting, and there was 65,000 sober alcoholics in that football stadium, and I was in awe of Alcoholics Anonymous and absolute awe of this program. They were down in the football field and they were passing the first flag ceremony, and my sponsor was helping them direct that flag ceremony, and ran down to tell Clancy hi and introduced me to people from all over the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you guys, I'm from Nebraska, and I was impressed, let me tell you. And I'm impressed today when I meet people from all the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I ran back up and joined my friends, and that flag ceremony started. And I will never forget this as long as I live. I'll never forget this. When the United States of America's flag touched the turf of that stadium, I saw 65,000 sober people go absolutely crazy. And I looked around myself. There was not one dry eye in that football stadium. I saw those old-timers sitting around, all the new people, and all the people in between. They all seemed to be loving this thing so very, very much. And I remember thinking to myself, what is wrong with me? Why can't I feel what these people are feeling? I too wanted to love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I could not seem to achieve it somehow. And for the first time in my sobriety, I got tears in my eyes. I did not try and stop. And for the first time with any amount of sincerity whatsoever, I said, God, thank you for getting me here. Please help me to stay here. Please help me love this program as much as these people do. And I will tell you guys, in a foreign country, in a foreign land, I came to believe, just like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, I came to believe in a power greater than myself by watching and being with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I really believe the old adage that we see when we're ready to see, we hear when we're ready to hear, and not before. I also believe that the actions my sponsor gave me got me to that point and stuff. So you know, what he basically told me was, do it till you believe it. Just keep doing it and stuff. And I have taught that God every day sincerely since, because I believe what my sponsor has taught me. I get a daily reprieve, and that's all that I get. You guys, I work at UCLA in surgery. I have a fabulous job over there and stuff. For years and years, I was on the heart and liver transplant teams. Now I'm in charge of that department on the night shift and so forth. It's just a great job to have. But anyway, I want to tell you this story because I've been asked to tell it. Many, many years ago, about 13 years ago, we had a trouble nursing crisis in Southern California, and we were working our butts off, let me tell you. And I was always the first one to bitch about it, let me tell you. You know, we're too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. I was a bitch is what I was. And this one particular week, I'd worked 72 hours, and I had this one particular night off I want to tell you about, and I went to a meeting early in the evening. I went home, and I went to bed early, and the phone rang about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I thought, I'm not answering that telephone. It's my boss wanting me to come to work, or it's one of the people I sponsor wanting to whine about something. I'm not picking up that telephone. Well, you guys have taught me well, I'm sorry to say. My sponsor has taught me, and he's been emphatic about this. You answer that phone when it rings. That is God's will for you. You pick up that telephone and answer it. And I answered the phone. And sure enough, it was my boss. And she said, I've got 18 people sick over here tonight. I have a liver transplant, a little girl over here. I have nobody to do it. Now get over here and help me. We have nobody. I know you work 72 hours. I don't even want to hear it. You have to help me. And she hung the phone up. And I thought, I'm going to call my sponsor up, but I really don't want to talk to Clancy about nothing at 2 o'clock in the morning, if you know the truth. I know what he would have told me. Nobody ever died from lack of sleep. Get to work, you know. And then I'd have to say, well, there's a first time for everything, Clancy, you know. But I just went to work, and I'm so glad that I did, because the most precious thing happened to me. My sponsor has taught me, do what is in front of you. Do what God gives you to do. And a long time ago, I said, what does that mean? What is do what's in front of me? Do what God gives me to do. I didn't get it, you guys. He said, for you in your case, why don't you just start answering the telephone? You know, clean the toilet, clean out the bathtub, get to work on time, do what's in front of you. He said, Karen, are you stupid or what? I really had a terrible time when I was brand new. And so I started picking up that telephone and answering it. But anyway, I'm so glad I went to work, because the most precious thing happened to me over there. I got over there and I sent my orderly upstairs to bring this 3-year-old little girl down to surgery. And we had a jet come from New York with the liver for this child. We had some time to kill and stuff. And my orderly called me in the back and he said, you're not going to believe all the people with this family. And I thought, well, that's nice that they have this sport. And, you know, he said, there's about 75, 80 people. And I thought, how highly unusual at 4 o'clock in the morning. How highly unusual any time, if you know the truth. But anyway, I went out to the front to see my little patient, and I could not believe all the amount of people that were with his family and stuff. And I'd been over and I talked to her, and her little arm, she had a little bear, and she had a blanket wrapped around that bear hanging on to him for dear life. And I said, oh, you brought your little baby bear down to surgery and tried to tell me her little bear was going to have a liver transplant. And I said, oh, you're both going to have one. And she said, no, just the bear, you know. And anyway, we sent the family out to the waiting room, and that mom and dad were in absolute hysterics, I got to tell you guys. And this little girl looked at me and she said, why is my mommy crying? Go tell my mommy not to cry. I can't stand when my mommy cries. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, what I've learned in this program, I was able to tell that baby the truth. And I said, your mommy's crying because your mommy loves you so very, very much. And she's worried about you. And that seemed to settle her down a little bit and stuff. And, you know, we have an anesthesiologist at UCLA that loves to play with the kids. He is just a delight to work with. So when she got her IV started, the bear got an IV started. And she thought that was real funny. And when she went to sleep, the bear went to sleep. It was really quite painless for us, you know the truth. But I must tell you guys, that 16-hour transplant did not go well. We almost lost that baby a couple times due to blood loss. I have never seen a team of people pull together like we did with that child that night. And 16 hours later, she went up to her room with not much hope at all, I gotta tell you guys. She'd lost a tremendous amount of blood. And I became obsessed with this child, and I had to see her again. And we have a rule at UCLA, you may not get involved with these transplant patients. They want to know where the organs come from. We cannot tell them. It's best not to see them after surgery. Now, I'm telling you by this room today that I'm real good at breaking rules. And I thought, I'm just going to go up and see how she's doing. I'm not going to talk to anybody. And when that little girl was 6 days post-op from that transplant, I went to her room and I opened the door to that baby's room. And I could not believe what was in front of my face. My God, the power power of God, the power of God. Here was this little baby girl. It was the first time she'd been through surgery. She was jumping up and down her crib. She had diapers hanging around her knees. She had a baby ball in one hand, and she had that bear in the other arm, and she had put Band-Aids all over this bear. He had Band-Aids on his ears, his eyes, and nose, and I mean everywhere. And I just stood in that hall, and I just cried like a baby. It is not cool to see the nursing staff ball and stuff, and that whole room full of people in there. And something caught the eye out. Caught my eye out of the corner of my eye. And I'll be damned if our book wasn't sitting on that kid's dresser. And it all made sense to me now. And I was in that room like a flash. And I said, the mother, I said, whose book is that? And she said, well, that's my book. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So is my husband. Her sponsor was there. His sponsor was there. And those 75, 80 people had driven 500 miles to be with his family. They were not from the LA area. And I was impressed, let me tell you. They showed me one more time what this gig is all about. It's about love and service, and that's all it's about. And I was impressed. I asked the mom, I said, how long have you been sober? And she said, 5 years today. I thought, oh my God, her baby up there, first time on her birthday, what a fabulous birthday present and stuff. And you know, I walked over to this little girl, and she looked at me, and she said, go away, I'm not sick anymore. And I had my scrub clothes on, and it scared the hell out of what I did. And I said, I came up here to hurt you. I came up here to see how you're doing. And she gave me her little bear, you guys. She says, you take him home and take care of him. He's so sick, he needs the nurse to take care of him. And I know why she gave me the bear, to get me the hell away from her and stuff. But I could pretend like she wanted me to have. And I told the mom, I said, I can't take that baby's bear home. My God, this bear went through this baby's liver transplant. We had a little plastic bed by her little head, her entire surgery. And she said, Karen, please take it. She wants you to have it. She's got 50 bears in this room. And she didn't. Indeed, have 50 bears in that room, and I felt like a fool walking down the hall with that bear, but that bear was my most prized possession for many, many years in Alcoholics Anonymous. They got to be too damned important to me. When it gets to be too important, we got to get rid of it, folks, let me tell you, and we have to give it away to keep it and stuff, and my sponsors always taught me that, and my little granddaughter says to me, Grandma, can I have that bear? And I said, it's Grandma's bear, Brandy, and she says, she knows the whole story, you guys, and she said, I said, Grandma will buy you 100 bears, that's my bear, and she said, I don't want 100 bears, I want that bear, and I said, it's Grandma's bear. I thought, I can't believe I said that to my grandbaby. I thought, oh, man. So I talked to Clancy about it, and he said, you know what? We have to give it away to keep it. Quit being so damn selfish. Give her the damn bear. He said, you got the memory. Give her the bear right now. And so I gave my little granddaughter my bear, and I just visited my little bear a year ago, and he sits on her dresser. She's now 22 years old in Lincoln, Nebraska. She has her old family. I'm a great-grandmother, as a matter of fact, and stuff. But, so she's taking very good care of my bear and stuff. But anyway, in the hospital room, I thought, I need to reciprocate here. I was obviously not prepared for a birthday party, and I had a medallion for 5 years of sobriety in my pocket. I was 9 years when this happened. And my sponsor gave me that when I was 5 years sober, and I could not seem to find the woman that was special enough, in my opinion, give my five-year medallion to. I'm a selfish woman, I'm sorry to say, and I knew I'd found her, let me tell you. And the reason that I'm in my pocket at night at work, there's narcotic keys next to that medallion. I don't tell anybody in this room tonight, today, when I open that narcotic cupboard, sometimes my eyes light like firecrackers, and I can grab that and remember where I'm coming from here. But anyway, I gave her my medallion. She says, Karen, I can't take that. My God, Clancy gave you that. And I said, no, I want you to have it. And I really, really meant that and stuff. And the nurses got wind of all this. We got a cake for the mother. We celebrated her 5 years of sobriety. And I cannot begin to tell you guys what a magnificent day it was in my life. And you know, the point I'm trying to make here, I could have missed the whole damn thing if I wouldn't have picked up that telephone. How many times in my life have I missed up because I wouldn't take a simple action like picking up the telephone? That makes me crazy if I think about it long enough. But things are very good with that family. That little girl's still alive. She's still doing well. I know that's very, very true, but I've had no more contact with them. It's got to be that way for many, many reasons and stuff. But anyway, people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing it, Karen? Why do you keep doing it? And I know of no greater thing to say to them. There are 12 traditions, says long form, so that this to the end, that my great blessings may never swell me, I may forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. And there's more reasons than that for me. You're the ones that walked me when nobody else would walk with me. You held my hand when nobody else would hold my hand. And you told me that you loved me. And I need you as desperately today as I need you in 1982. You've taught me how to live. You've taught me how to love. You've taught me how to keep my pants up on all those things. And I don't do any of those things very well. But I'll tell you the one thing that I do with 200% absolute perfection, and that is this, that I love this program more than in the whole world, and it's truly a story from an alcoholic hell I cannot even describe. I have truly been given, just like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, I have truly been given the keys to the kingdom. And I'm going to say one more thing, and I'm going to shut my mouth here. It has been one hell of a walk from Skid Row, Nebraska, to where I stand in Prescott, California today, Prescott, Arizona today, and I think that but for the grace of God in Alcoholics like Simon said, I would have missed it all. Thank you for having me, and thank you for my life.